Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Gone in the Night. Enjoy the episode.
Stuart, you're my cow. Give me your blood.
Cows give milk, Jeff.
Give me your blood. Blah! Oh, okay.
It's milk.
You might have assumed that we're covering a vampire movie this week based on that, but unlike The Informers, which was a stealth vampire movie, this week's episode is not about a vampire movie.
No,
it might be called Gone in the Night, and it might be all about blood transfusion, but it is not a vampire movie.
It is not.
It's about bloodsuckers of another kind. I'm talking guys who are cheating, you know? Eh? Eh?
Oh, you could have taken that joke in so many better ways, my guy. Eh? Come on.
talk about my ex, right? Bloodsucker.
Okay. If you had done the ex.
If I'd done that.
That would have been it. Thank you for not listening to our episode last week, Sarah Cooper.
Yeah.
Everything was not fine.
It was not fine.
Thank you for listening to the episode before that, Destination Wedding with Cole Bradley.
Good episode.
Yeah, that was a good episode. And this will be a good episode. Yeah. I have high hopes.
Because this week we're talking about, as we've said, Gone in the Night.
A real movie.
A real movie, which is Winona's first starring role in, as far as I can tell, since two, if you, okay. We're not going to count The Letter in this. Because, like, theoretically, The Letter is a starring role for Winona.
But it's such a nothing movie.
It's not a real movie. Let's just be straight here. The Letter is not a real movie.
Yeah, well...
Destination Wedding is a two-hander. It's Winona does get top billing in it. Mm-hmm. But it's like Winona and Keanu.
Yeah.
I'm talking, like, a movie where Winona is the main character, unquestionably.
Yeah.
And I think... And the last time that we had a movie... That was like Winona is unquestionably the lead is, I believe, Lost Souls in the year 2001.
Which even then.
Yeah, it's kind of still like a double hander with Ben Chaplin a little bit.
Yeah.
If you want to talk like unquestionably the lead, Girl Interrupted.
It's Girl Interrupted. Yeah. In 1999.
That's where, like, she's not like in a romance co-lead kind of situation.
23 years.
Yes.
23 years.
Yes.
That's fucked up.
Because this is undeniably a Winona Ryder movie.
Yes.
You know, and we're not going to say it's a flawless movie or best movie, but it is undeniably a Winona Ryder movie.
And it's a real movie.
Yeah, it's a real movie.
It's a real movie.
Say it's like, you know, like it's on the level of, say, you know, Girl Interrupted, for an example, or... most of her 90s work, or even some of her like bigger budget supporting work in the 2010s, it's definitely a small movie. But
yeah.
It has real production value, real actors. There's clearly choices being made.
Yeah.
They're not all successful, but it's a movie where we have stuff to talk about.
And this is a very formulaic, this is horror. We call this horror. Thriller.
I would say it's a thriller.
Thriller.
Yeah. It never quite tips into horror, but it's a thriller.
Yeah. And it follows a very recognizable thriller pattern that we're seeing in the most recent movies. We're going to talk about this a little bit, but Nicole mentioned, I think, off air.
Yeah.
After we finished Destination Wedding, that this is kind of... this is released the same year as Barbarian.
Yes.
And both share the kind of like premises of like, what do you do when you show up to an Airbnb and it's double booked? And it starts off spiraling out that way.
Yeah, this comes out a few weeks before Barbarian.
A few weeks?
Well, Barbarian premieres at Comic-Con 2 weeks after this movie comes out. And then it comes out in theaters 2 months later.
But they're
very similar release time for a very similar like base concept. They both go in very different directions with the idea. So beyond like that basic point, there is not much similarity between them.
July 15th, 2022 was the limited theatrical release of Gone in the Night.
Yeah.
Barbarians was
September 9th.
So
it's like a 2 month between them.
Yeah, technically speaking, Gone in the Night came out before, but I bet you Barbarian was filmed before.
I would say they're probably filmed around the same time.
You think so?
Yeah.
Gone in the Night just seems like it's a low enough budget that it probably needed to be shopped around a little bit.
Barbarian was shot at the end of 2021.
Yeah.
Gone in the Night was shot at the end of 2021. Barbarian was seemingly shot, beginning of 2021. So yeah, Barbarian was shot first.
And okay, that's interesting. Because when I watch Gone in the Night, and Barbarian's still ingrained in my memory because I love that movie. Gone in the Night feels more like a COVID film than Barbarian does. Yeah.
Well, they both have very COVID energy of being trapped in like a single location with minimal actors.
Sure.
Like
sure.
Even the Justin Long bits outside of
he's in a parking house, garage.
He's in a parking garage or he's on the phone with his agent.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a lot of like boardroom scenes. Yeah.
But they both have big COVID energy. BCE. Which is just like
big COVID energy.
You can like tell when movies were shot during COVID.
Yeah.
Even the high budget ones.
Small cast, no background, very few
minimal
locations.
Background, small locations.
Yeah. A lot of driving stuff.
Yeah.
Driving was very optimal for COVID.
Yeah.
Because you could have the windows down.
And so this movie, you know, big BCE, big COVID energy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I wouldn't call it wholly successful. Mm. But that all being said. There is stuff to talk about here, right?
Yeah, I was shocked because this is a movie we had seen coming down the pike for a while. And my only zone of reference for this movie was like, okay, the poster looks very thriller horror.
Yes.
Winona's the main like tagline.
Yeah.
It's like the poster, if you look at IMDb, it's like it got a festival laurel at the top right corner.
For South by Southwest. South by Southwest.
Which is where it premiered. Then it's a quote, a mesmerizing must-see. And then
from Mashable.com.
Yeah. And then it's Winona Ryder, and then Gone in the Night.
It's nice to kind of see Winona Ryder in big font, right?
Yeah. So it's like, it's Winona Ryder before the title, then Eli Horowitz, which Eli Horowitz, like this is his directorial, this is his feature directorial debut.
Yeah.
Before this, he had written a few and directed a few episodes of Homecoming, which I tried to watch. I couldn't really get into it. I hear the show's pretty good. That's all I can really
say.
Never
heard of the show.
I hear it's an Amazon Prime series. I hear it's not bad. Pretty good.
Starring Janelle Monáe. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, season one, I think, features...
Sam Esmail is the director. That's the Mr. Robot guy.
For what?
Sam Esmail is the creator of it. He's the Mr. Robot guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is very Mr. Robot-y. Very, very Mr. Robot-y.
A show I've also never seen.
So I think he's coming off the coattails of some of the success from of Homecoming into this very low budget movie.
Yeah.
I have this little clip with Eli Horowitz talking about sort of like his thought process in making this movie. That I'll just play here real quick.
Feelings kind of sneak in by the back door. Or a side door, at least, and I have to just start with something very practical. And so for this, you know, it's a pretty low budget indie movie. And I actually, 10 years ago, bought this little cabin. It's actually a mobile home in the woods, in the Redwoods, that I fix up with friends. And then I'm there sometimes and I rent it out sometimes and through Airbnb. And so I'm always afraid I'm not that organized of somehow double booking it. And so that just seemed like kind of an easy kind of classic genre beginning that then we could take into unexpected directions.
So, I mean, right there already, he's thinking of like Airbnb, double book, catastrophe, exact same premise of like Barbarian.
And I do think that's something that's interesting.
Yeah.
Both this and Barbarian.
Yeah.
Especially with is thinking about the COVID of it all.
It's difficult not to compare the two.
It's difficult not to compare the two. But I think like during COVID, like the scariest thing was like, what if you were trapped with like another person
that you didn't
who could
know.
Be sick?
Yeah.
And so both these movies are playing on that base idea of like, what if you show up to a place that's supposed to be isolated for you and someone else is there?
The contamination.
Are these
things?
There's a contamination aspect to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this movie doesn't really dig into beyond that. But I do think subconsciously, both these movies are playing with like that idea in their conception.
Yeah, Barbarian does it more successfully though, because I it's interesting that I hear Eli Horowitz like talk about that initial premise, but
because the movie doesn't do much with it. Because it ends up not being about that.
Right. And it's it becomes being about something wild. It comes
about being about like adrenochroming.
It's wildly weird. Dermot Mulroney's in this movie.
Yes.
Who will come in. And then the rest of the cast, we talked about this, but like Owen Teague, who plays Al.
Best known for playing Noah in the new Planet of the Apes.
The Kingdom movie.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. He's the main ape.
John,
he looked very apey in this.
John Gallagher Jr. plays Max, who is Winona's husband or boyfriend.
Boyfriend,
that's right. They say they're not married officially.
The whole thing.
You'll know him as Emmett in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
He's mostly known for The Newsroom and Broadway, I feel like.
Yeah. And then Brianne Ju.
Brianne Ju.
Who plays Greta. And you know her from a few things.
What is she in? I recognized her.
She's in a lot of TV shows of like the high school drama, college drama sort of style. She was in an episode of famed cop show Chicago PD.
She was, yeah. I see.
And so, yeah. But all that to be said, like, small cast.
Yeah.
Very highly billed and put on the back of Winona. Yes. Which I think,
which is cool.
That's really cool.
It's cool because, like, we've been talking about since Stranger Things started, kind of this, like, where is her movie comeback?
Yeah.
And it just, like... There is, you know, if you're waiting for her movie comeback, like Travolta or Fraser had, and there's just like Destination Wedding, it's kind of like a little blip, and you're like, okay, and then she's not in a movie again for 3 more years. Then she's in a Netflix comedy special for like a scene. You're like, okay, well, that's whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it's just nice that she has a lead role.
Yeah.
Even if the movie is ultimately not successful, it's a lead role.
In a real movie.
In a real movie.
Yeah.
And that's nice to see, right?
It is nice to see.
Because after this, we're talking about...
Stranger Things. And then we're talking about Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice,
which, like, she is ostensibly the lead of that movie.
Yeah. I would argue more than Ortega.
Yeah, Jenna, she's, like, the movie is about Winona.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the movie when we get to it. There's a lot of, like... Tim Burton-y storytelling issues in that movie.
Yeah.
Script issues. But she is, like, the main character of that movie. So, like, it's kind of nice that she's, like, having this little... She's finally getting a little bit of something going.
Yeah, and the fact that it's putting the marketing of this movie on her back is also a huge thing. Like, they're trying to sell this off of Winona's name, and which is a good sign, I think, because that means she has a name to sell something off of at this current time. And it matters because this movie is... You said it was filmed 2021?
What's up?
You said this was
filmed... Yeah, at the end of 2021.
So this is after people have already seen, like, 2 to 3 seasons of Stranger Things.
Yes.
So she's gotten her TV comeback through Stranger Things already as Joyce Byers.
Mm-hmm.
We've addressed like how like she has a more pivotal role in season one than she does in the later seasons. But that being said, it's like it's understandable that it's like, okay, like she's back in Stranger Things. She has a bigger role in that show. People are starting to recognize her for that, as well as the rest of the cast. Like, we should give her own movie. Like, I think she could spearhead and carry a movie.
She's
on
gotten
her
like her stock back up.
Yeah,
in that sense.
So we'll get into it, but I think it's unfortunate that Gone in the Night was not as well as made as it probably could have been.
Yeah, because we should probably just start going through it because I think the main issue of this movie we can get to pretty quick.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the structure of the movie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very much so. I do want to play one little quick clip from an interview done with Dermot Mulroney, who plays a role in this movie. But just to talk about a previous experience.
And it's true blue, but you never really know. You haven't seen somebody in that long. Like, how are they going to remember? But we worked together on How to Make an American Quilt, and really, really lovely cast, incredible cast, especially looking back. as we've lost some of them, but to work with her when I was young and she was even younger. And even some of that feel somehow plays in this movie, or I know that was part of Eli's intent, was to sort of ring that sort of 90s bell a little bit somehow, to have
Dermot Mulroney and Winona Ryder reuniting in this movie,
which
from
is nice.
How to Make an American Quill. Dermot's role very small, because he plays the boyfriend or the husband, the fiance.
Yeah, like that, the shitty fiance in How to Make an American Quill.
Yeah, that Winona's like thinking about leaving or trying to decide if she's going to accept his proposal or not. But yeah, I don't know, small, nice little thing. So yeah, let's just get into the plot.
Yes.
Of this movie.
Oh, I also do want to say this movie was originally titled The Cow.
For reasons.
For reasons we will get to.
Yeah.
It premiered at South by Southwest with the title The Cow, and then after it was purchased, the name was changed to Gone in the Night. You're like, why is this movie called The Cow? You may be asking. We'll find out.
I think that would have been a better title.
It would have been cool as hell if it was called The Cow, right?
Well, think about like...
Gone in the Night is a better title, unquestionably, I would say.
No, I think it should be.
But The Cow is... I hate like the titles. I dislike movies that are just like The Blank, The Blank.
Huh.
I think that's kind of lazy titling.
Yeah.
There's a lot of movies that are just like The Letter. I'm like, who gives a shit? Like, give me something fun.
Yeah.
Or like blank colon blank. Those titles are annoying as
blank,
well.
Blank colon blank.
Yeah. Like Captain America, Brave New World.
Oh, like, you know, the subtitle shit.
Yeah, like kind of like a lazy subtitle.
Yeah.
Give me, you know, for whether you like the movie or not, if we want to talk Marvel, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is a good title.
Yeah. Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Austin Powers in Goldmember is fun. Austin Powers in The Spy Who Shagged Me is fun. Yeah. If you want to do franchisey, I think I prefer fun titles like that.
Yeah.
Star Wars Episode 7, Episode 8, The Last Jedi is fun as well.
Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
A title that does not make sense.
It doesn't.
The movie is not about the Skywalker Rising. Anyway, I don't know what he's fucking talking about. JJ, someone needs to
fire his
figure out what's going on there.
Burn him.
Yeah. So movie starts.
They're driving down a road.
Winona
Ryder
is playing Kath.
Kath.
With her boyfriend Max.
Short for
described
Kath.
On Wikipedia as slacker boyfriend Max, which I like. got his ass.
Oh, there's a Wikipedia for this.
There's an extensively written plot.
Oh, good. Eli Horowitz wrote it.
Yeah, he did. Probably to promote the movie.
This was great because like they start off driving a car in isolated woods.
Yes. Driving down like a windy road. And immediately I said to Stuart, because we watched this movie together, I said, I swear to God if they hit a deer. Because I'm so sick.
Hold on.
Movie, crash into deer.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I'm trying to think about
all the movies that have deer.
Because Get Out starts with them hitting a deer.
Yeah.
Killing
of a Sacred Deer.
Does Killing of a Sacred... I've not seen Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh.
But like the opening of Get Out is the Get Better. I think it was The Invitation. It's a movie that came out around the same time.
Oh, as, yes.
Get Out. That also starts with...
somebody running over a deer.
Someone running over a deer. There's... You know, Tommy Boy, They Hit a Deer, but that's a comedy. The Straight Story. I mean, these are. I'm looking at a list of movies where people hit deer.
Oh, but I get what you're saying. There's the horror movie trope.
Yes,
it's become a trope now. Where at the beginning of your movie, you have somebody like hitting a deer.
Yes,
and
it's like the death of innocence or something.
Yeah,
and like I know Get Out and The Invitation. There are others. I have seen them. I can't just remember them off the top of my head. But I was like, I swear to God, if they hit a deer. I'm going to be so like, oh my God, don't fucking hit the deer. Stop.
Yeah.
But thankfully they don't hit a deer.
They don't hit a deer.
Instead,
they do pull over and he grabs something.
Yeah. They pull over.
He grabs like a mushroom or a rock.
Yeah, because he sees something that he grabs.
I don't know.
I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
It's not important.
Wasn't.
Yeah. It never comes up again.
Not important.
Yeah. But they pull up to this, you know,
cabin,
remote isolated cabin. It's night now.
It's supposed to be a getaway trip for them.
It's a spontaneous surprise from Max to Kathy, his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they pull up to the house and there's a car there. and some guy in a weird rain jacket who's like kind of skulking,
hunched over,
comes out the front door, and this is Owen Teague, the ape.
Like,
he has ape characteristics in this movie.
Here's the issue, okay, right away.
Why is he doing that?
Why is he wearing a rain jacket inside?
Yeah.
Why is he wearing a rain jacket inside? Why is he hunched over like fucking Gollum standing on all fours? Yeah. And then the other thing too is like again, I'm going to go back to Barbarian a lot. But when the lead actress in that movie knocks on the door and Bill Skarsgård opens,
yeah.
Here's the thing about Bill Skarsgård. He does a great job of playing like normal, friendly, safe man.
Yes.
But here's the issue. Look at Bill Skarsgård's face.
Yeah, he looks like...
Tell me if you feel safe.
He's playing Count Orlok in the new Nosferatu. And all I'm going to say is, my man kind of looks like Count Orlok.
like as much as... And that's why the casting of Bill Skarsgård in the movie is perfect. Because like as much as Bill will like put on this performance of being a nice and safe man, you can't ignore the fact that... My man looks a little spooky.
He looks ghoulish.
But so then...
He's got that very chiseled Scandinavian
face. Great. And he's got like the lazy eye bit. But like that's all great stuff, right? Because it's like you're conflicted on how you're supposed to feel about it. And
yeah.
Everything that happens in that movie, you're like, I'm not sure how to react. Whereas Gone in the Night, when they show up, they see fucking Owen Teague in a rain jacket, hunched over. I'm putting the car in reverse and I'm leaving.
Put it in reverse, Terry.
They said they're hours away from the city and like
the nondescript city. Somewhere in California.
Yeah. We suspected like, was this shot in Atlanta? But I think it actually was shot in California.
Yes.
And so, no, but the other thing was,
eventually like John Gallagher Jr. is like, I'm gonna get out of the car and talk to the guy.
Yeah.
And they go up and they're whispering to each other. You can't really hear what they're saying.
Their excuses of why they can't just like turn around and leave are so stupid. Yeah. It's like, we've been driving all night, so we're really tired. She doesn't like driving at night.
I don't have a license.
And I don't have a license.
Yes.
Those are all pretty
and
stupid.
Owen Teague is just like, I don't care. We rented this place, dude. And then his girlfriend pops out.
But he's like aggressively.
Yeah, he's pretty aggressive towards them.
Again,
Winona's like, let's just leave.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Skarsgård and Barbarian's like, oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to come inside and get dry? Like, he's at least like a little bit like kind of trying to be helpful. In this movie, Owen Teague is like, fuck off.
Yeah. The
like,
magic trick of Barbarian is that you think that the movie is going to be about being trapped in a space with a creepy guy.
Yes.
Who's trying to be nice. And then it pulls a fucking 180 on you and reveals, no, there's just a crazy monster living in the basement.
I haven't seen Heretic yet.
I have not. It seems like a big you movie. I heard it's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Big me movie?
Yeah. Kind of seems like a Stuart movie.
What about?
It just seems it's about two like Christian missionaries who get trapped in Hugh Grant's basement and he like he's like a staunch atheist and he's like putting them through all these religious tests to try and escape.
Oh, I thought he was the religious guy.
No, he's the heretic.
He's the heretic.
Yeah.
But I think heretic means like you're the wrong type of religion, not that you're an atheist.
Yeah, it's just.
But maybe
what's the movie going to be called? Atheist. It seems like nobody would see it.
Fair. Totally fair. Okay, so the boyfriend, Winona's boyfriend, talks to Owen Teague, and Winona then comes up, and she's like, I think we should just go. I think we should just leave. This is weird. And that's when Brianne Ju, she's playing Greta, comes out.
Yes.
And she's like, you guys can stay. Like, oh, okay. And then Max, Winona's boyfriend, is like, okay, yeah, let's go. And like very, a little like eagerly, like willing to like just stay over with random strangers.
Mm.
Again, in Barbarian, it's like, there's a lot of things that need to happen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that need to happen, like in a proper sequence for it to be believable to an audience that these two need to stay in the same house as each other. Like, they're both out of town. They're both here at a conference. The Airbnb is in a bad neighborhood in Detroit.
Yes.
It's all like, and it's raining outside. Like, there's a lot of elements in place. This is like, it's dark outside. We don't want to drive back to the city.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the stakes are like kind of low at this point.
Yes,
but
they are.
They do go inside. They also kind of awkwardly stand around and chat. Winona talks about how she and Max met, which is she was teaching a hydroponics class. We love to say the word hydroponics.
Hydroponics. It's a good word. It's a great word.
Hydroponics. And that he attended it, and then they went out on a date to Starbucks, and they started dating.
Yeah.
Erstwhile, Greta and Al tell their story, which is how they're like kind of, you know, free lovers. They don't believe in the institutions of marriage and capitalism. They just kind of have been exclusively fucking for several years is the exact wording.
Yes.
And so the two of them or the four of them play a board game together, which I can't remember what it's called.
It's like an old boomer board game about spicing up your love life.
About like essentially just like, you know, having sexy times with other people around your table.
See, like I have a game that's called like Two of a Kind.
Yeah.
That's like supposed to be like a double date game.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you to lick the elbow of the person.
Yeah, this
to
game
your
tells
right.
has Greta lick John Gallagher Jr.'s elbow.
Like, I already know what can make this like a little bit better. That like Greta and Al, they recommend the board game.
Yes.
Whether it's a board game that they...
Instead, it's Max who grabs it.
So then the problem that we are addressed with now is like anything that now happens awkwardly because of the board game is Max's fault.
Yes.
And but like, if they're the ones that initiate it, it just again hammers it to the pedal of like, these people are weird and they're up to something weird.
The movie that never decides what specifically what it wants to be about.
Right.
Because at this point, it's like a fit, like about cheating in a sense.
Yeah.
Like it's non-committal relationships.
Max is the weirdest one in the room right now. It's saying that with Owen Teague sitting right there.
Looking like a baboon.
Like when you have Owen Teague in your movie, Teague him out.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Because he's not really doing anything here.
No.
They play this weird board game. And then the next...
Winona goes to bed. She's like, I'm tired. I'm going to retire. It's like, it's 10:30. It's like, yeah, but I've been driving. And so she goes to sleep.
She wakes up the next morning. There's no one there.
There's no one in the house.
She walks out in the woods looking. And she finds Owen Teague like hunched on a log. And he's like, I came out here and I found him fucking. And then they left. They were gone in the night. And she's like, no.
This was dumb.
But she says, I'm done with this relationship. And she leaves. She drives home.
This was dumb.
Yeah, it's dumb.
This reads like you've used this expression before, and I like it, this expression a lot. This reads first pass on a screenplay.
Yes.
Where it's like, okay, we need to figure out a way that like they trap Max somewhere, but they don't tip Winona off to anything suspicious, so she willingly leaves them to their own devices with Max. What can we tell her? Well, maybe Owen can, or maybe Al can make up the story that Greta and Max snuck off in the night together.
I actually think this is like fine-ish.
Doesn't it seem like she like swallows it so
She swallows it very
quickly.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
But I do think like, if ostensibly what you're trying to set up this movie at this point is, you go on a date and your boyfriend leaves with another woman, and then you're like, you can't let it go, and you're trying to investigate what happened.
Because I get that.
That's what the movie is trying to be at this point, and it never sticks to the landing on that.
Well, it's like, I get that on paper, where it's like, this movie's about like when a partner you've known for X amount of years just leaves you out of the blue, no explanation. It's like, yeah, at least want to know why, and getting that closure is what helps.
The thing I can say about this movie is I think this is a bad movie that I think has such a wild twist at the end that I'm kind of like won back by its silliness. But that overall, I just don't think works.
I told you.
It never decides what it wants to be about.
See, Jeff, like when we're 20 minutes into this movie, I told you to, we watched this movie together at your place. And at 20 minutes in, I told you and I said, Jeff, I feel like this movie is building up to a payoff that's not going to be worth it.
And it's not.
And it's not.
But it, like, the end of this movie is almost so anticlimactic.
It's the reverse of it.
It's so anticlimactic that I find it so silly.
It's not that it's underwhelming. It's that it's overwhelmingly underwhelming.
Yeah, it's whelming. It's whelming.
No, it's like,
it's not over or under. It is simply whelming.
Well, so anyway, she
just goes home.
She goes home.
And we cut to her talking with her friend at her hydroponic store. Where she's like, yeah, he left with a girl. I don't know.
That's when, like, as she's driving home, we get the famous montage where she's driving and it's raining outside. Just thinking about all her time that she spent with Max. Okay, so anyway.
Good joke.
Thank you. I thought I'd build that up real quickly.
But she's telling her friend about this. And then she can't stop thinking about Max and why he left.
And she's doing the classic thing where it's like, maybe Greta did me a favor.
Yeah.
If he was so willing to leave me, maybe she did me a favor.
But she needs closure.
Right. Can you see where the movie could have ended in like 30 minutes though?
Yeah.
She could have been like, fuck it. I don't need to know why he left me.
Yeah. But no, she can't let it go, which is what you think this movie is going to be about.
Right.
Is like not being able to let a shitty relationship go.
Yeah. Which is something.
Because she's established earlier that she's a divorcee.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like
she's getting older.
And so you're like, okay, that could be something. Maybe there's an idea here. There's not. Because she Googles the address of the cabin, finds the phone number of the owner,
mm-hmm.
and calls them. And Dermot Mulroney picks the phone. And is like, hey, oh yeah, all right. And she's like, yeah, so this girl, Greta, left a book at your cabin that I rented, and I wanted to give it back to her.
She's like trying to get her address.
And he's like, I can't give out addresses of other tenants, but I'm driving through the city. I could come and pick up the book. She's like, oh, no, that's nothing. He's like, no, I'm serious. Give me the address. So she gives him the address of her plant shop.
Yes.
The next day, she's at her plant shop. Some kind of like shitty guy comes in.
Some businessman
and
walks
like,
in.
Puts a dead plant down. And she's like, did you water it? And he's like, that wasn't in the instructions. I didn't know I had to do that. I want a refund. Dermot Mulroney walks in behind him and saves the day by being like, oh, is that the rare ficus
plant?
Yeah, is that the rare ficus plant?
She's like, yeah. It's like, I'll take $50 for it. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's my plant, buddy.
Yeah.
And then he buys the plant back and Winona made another profit.
Yeah.
Great. It's like they're trying to give him like a save the cat moment to make Dermot Mulroney. Can I spoil something a little quick?
Yeah.
Just get to point.
Yeah.
Dermot Mulroney is a bad guy that we're going to find out very quickly, not because the movie reveals it, but because you, the audience, are smart enough to know at this point in time that once you reach the 45-minute mark, you already know Dermot Mulroney's involved somehow without even the movie dropping you hints, which makes it more aggravating when the movie thinks that it's pulling a fast one on you. And it's like, dude, I kind of already knew that this guy was in on it in some way or capacity. So anyway, they set up this whole bit that Dermot Mulroney's a good guy because he's willing to go to bat for Winona at her plant store. But then they talk, they go to like a little cafe or something, and she tells him what happened.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I went to the cabin, my boyfriend came with me, there were two people already there that said they already booked it, and then I woke up the next day and my boyfriend left for this woman, and I just like to know like why.
Yeah.
And Dermot Mulroney's like, that sounds like a fun time, I'm in.
Mm. Yeah.
just jumping into it. Why?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into this, but like the whole scheme behind it was undone by its own doing.
Yeah.
Like if Dermot Mulroney didn't do anything here, be like, well, that sounds like a bad problem.
Yeah.
Sorry. And walked away. She probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Like
she probably would have just had that lingering in the back of her head.
And then 5 years would have passed and Dermot Mulroney would have been.
But instead, he's just like, let's get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
Oh my god.
And starts the little neo-noir segment of the movie.
Yes.
Quote unquote.
Stakeout.
Yeah. So they go to Greta's address.
It's like a warehouse.
It's like a fucking shack attached to the back of a warehouse. They follow her, normal behavior, to like an underground rave. Party
that we never get to see.
Yeah, we never go inside the party
because that would be too many extras.
Yes,
for COVID.
But Dermot, they walk into this warehouse, and Dermot is like, I'll check upstairs. You go downstairs. And he goes up the stairs, and we don't see him again for a little bit. She goes downstairs. She finds her. Greta walks out and is like, oh, shit, it's you.
Yeah.
And Winona sees that Greta's phone background is a picture of her and Max. And Greta's just like, yeah, sorry for stealing him, but I do love him. And Winona's like, okay, I guess that's that. And she goes back up. She runs into Dermot Moran, who comes out. She's like, oh, nothing upstairs.
So stupid.
Yeah, it's very silly. And then, like, the two of them start seeing each other. He tells her about how his dad got afflicted with a very rare disease. Yeah. Died of it.
Yeah.
And...
just that his dad has like a neurodegenerative disorder where his like nerves would like essentially degenerate over time, mm-hmm. kind of like a cerebral palsy,
yeah,
kind of a thing, or MS, and that it's genetic, so he has it too, but instead of waiting for the disease to kill him, he's working on this treatment, this experimental treatment that he's mm-hmm. personally working on,
yeah.
And they mention this a few times in the movie.
Yes.
It's not like a one and done, like, yeah. He mentions this.
He's got a treatment.
He's got a treatment.
Yeah.
And he's like, and Winona asks him about said treatment a few times. Like, well, when you're working on your treatment, like, what do you mean by experimental? It's like, well, you know, it's not like, what's the word he uses? It's like traditional science. It's like borderline homeopathic or some stuff like that. It's like, he uses weird lingo. All of this to be said, like, Winona's basically fallen for him, right?
Yeah.
Can safely assume that.
Yeah, they're getting together.
They're getting together.
Then we start getting the flashbacks, right? The most poorly positioned flashbacks in a movie ever.
Yeah, I think this happens a little bit prior to this moment, though. Like, I think it's like I think the first one is right after her plant shop scene.
Yes.
But the first flashback is they're at a dinner party. Winona, her boyfriend Max, and a couple of Winona's friends are there. And like they make like some passing comment that like, oh, Max, like how expensive is it to look like a loser?
Yeah.
Like a little, because like everyone's wearing like, not like fancy clothes, but like put together outfits.
Put together
and Max is wearing like a death metal t-shirt and jeans. Like they try to hit the hammer home that like Winona's like the older teacher and he's like the late 20s, young 30s student.
Yeah.
It's like kind of the dynamic there.
And so like he leaves the party and goes to get wine.
They talk about a cult.
Yeah, they talk about a cult. They talk about cults.
That you think is just background noise.
Yeah. But then he goes down to this like corner store to get wine. And he's like, yeah, all these wines with cheeky labels, same thing as all of them. So edgy, dude. And he runs into Greta and Al, shocker, that he knew them before. And he's like, are you guys members of a cult? Because he's like drunk and just thinking about the last conversation. Like, what if we were?
And then he's like, well, then I won in.
Yeah, and he thinks they're cool. And so he agrees to like meet up with them.
Well, they say there's a special concert happening out in the Redwoods.
Yeah.
We have a cabin that you can meet us at.
Well, no, first they go to like a rave together, right? That happens. Yeah, he goes to like a bar or a rave.
A bar. They go to a bar. Yes, yes, yes.
And they shoot it against a wall, but the implication is there's a lot of like partying going on behind the camera.
Oh, I'm just now I'm realizing something that I did not realize. They ask him a lot of personal questions like, do you have any STDs? Have you had sex with a lot of people? They ask him about like, I don't know. They ask him like a lot of weird personal questions.
Yeah.
But I understand where that comes from now. 'Cause they're seeing if he's clean.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay.
That makes sense.
For what comes later. So they're asking a lot of these weird questions. And then they tell him about this concert in the woods.
Yeah.
That he needs to come alone, meet them at this cabin. And
Mm-hmm.
So then at this point in the flashback,
we now have all of the information about what was up with Max, which is annoying because Winona doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And like it's an attempt at dramatic irony that isn't working because now like we understand everything that's happening and we're just watching her have this like nice relationship with Dermot Mulroney. And we're like, well, this guy's clearly in on it. This isn't nice. This is just like a bummer. And you're just like, all right, whatever.
And so then we cut back to when Nona goes back to the cabin during the day.
She goes back to meet him there.
Yeah. And he's there and they have like a quick.
This is just a sweaty storytelling here. Like
it is.
The flashbacks aren't motivated by anything. Well, they're just thrown in there and they're put in the wrong spots
to go back to Barbarian.
Yeah.
That is an example of what a good timing of a flashback and good pacing looks
when
like.
When it cuts from the hag lady attacking Bill Skarsgård to Justin Long driving down the road singing, it's very funny. It's great.
Right, but I mean the flashback of the old man guy who like abducts women.
The flashback within the flashback.
A flashback within the flashback?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think where in the prop structure that is.
Because that movie has such a fun Russian nesting doll structure.
Yeah, it does.
Where it's like there's the story within the story within the story.
Yeah.
And it just keeps expanding.
But yeah, the flashback of like the 60s was timed out very well. Like that movie's pacing is just like, that's a good masterclass of how to pace a horror film very well is Barbarian. Whereas this movie, it's like, because they chop up and place the flashbacks all like interspersed throughout it, it's like you said, like we're getting all these extra tiny pieces of the puzzle that Winona doesn't get. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have served us better if like in Barbarian, if it just dumped it all at once right before the reveal. There's a moment where they could have dumped it all at once and it's right before she opens the shipping container.
Yeah.
I think that would have been like not the best.
I agree.
But
no,
a
I
good
think that
spot.
That's the correct spot to put the
to put like right before she opens it and she sees like
because then there's the twist of like, you figuring out what it is through the flashbacks. And you're like, Oh shit. Instead of like now when she goes back to that shipping container, you know everything that's about to happen.
You know exactly who's gonna be in that shipping container. You don't know in what state of mind, but you kind of get an idea.
Because they keep talking about transfusions.
Yeah, he keeps talking about transfusions.
At this point you figured out, all right.
There's some blood.
Dermot Moroney is using John Gallagher Jr. as a blood bag, essentially, is what you can kind of assume.
And it's because Max has a certain protein in his blood.
Yes.
That is compatible with Dermot Mulroney's nerve disease.
Yeah.
That keeps him young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and so
basically what he there's a nerve compatibility.
This ending gets fucking sweaty. Yeah,
because this ending is everybody winds up in this shipping container.
Okay, but can
the most COVID safe location of all time.
Well, I just want to get there for a second because it's so fucking sweaty. So like she's in the cabin first with him and he goes somewhere. Oh, he goes to find his son, who we find out, Owen Teague, who plays Al, is Dermot Mulroney's son.
Yeah.
And Greta is Al's, like, partner? Not really explained, because she's not Dermot Mulroney's daughter.
Yeah.
So it's just Owen Teague is Dermot Mulroney's son. So he goes out to the woods, and he sees the two teens, like, hiding. Meanwhile, Winona in the cabin, she... what does she discover before the padlock on the door?
I think it's just the padlock on the door, right?
But I thought she looks at something that makes her want to like open it.
Oh, she does, but I can't remember what it is.
Can't remember what it is.
Oh, she finds a picture of
Dermot
Mulroney with
a kid, and then she flips it around, and it's a grown up picture of Owen Teague and Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah,
and it's like.
She's like, oh my God, they're all in it together. And I'm like, yeah, no shit.
No fucking shit.
So she opens a padlock door.
Wow, this is a disaster.
She opens a padlock door and she finds like a blood transfusion
station. It's like a little recliner.
It's like
chair
kind of an underwhelming reveal behind a padlock door.
It is.
And then she looks at the window and there's a shipping container. She's like, I should go check out what's going on in there.
It costs you no money to just put traces of blood in the bag. Like more traces of blood.
I just had
John
Dollar Jr. be in that room. We could have cut all this business about her walking over the shipping containers, have him in that room.
Yeah, but they do make a point of it in the movie that like he takes his transfusions in the cabin in the woods in this cabin and not in the shipping container because he doesn't want to look at how the sausage gets made, kinda. Yeah. Which that I got a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But she like then Owen Teague and or like Al and Greta, they see Dermot Mulroney, and she's like, "Is she gone?" "No, she's still here." "She's still here?"
"Yeah."
"And you left her alone in the fucking cabin?"
And so they all run back to the cabin.
And of course, the padlock door is open.
And they're like, "Oh shit, she went to the shipping container."
And so they go, and so she goes to the shipping container, she opens it, and that's when we cut back to the other flashback.
Yes.
Where
You should put all the flashbacks right here.
This is where you should put all the flashback, we missed one. But anyway, there's a flashback before that we've got to mention that. Now Winona and John Gallagher Jr. are in the cabin.
Yes.
And Max even tells Al's like, "Why'd you bring her?" He's like, "Oh, don't worry, she's gonna love it." Like, referring to the concert,
yeah,
right?
He thinks like he's the only one in this concert because he's a stupid person. He's an idiot.
And so then after Winona goes to sleep, it's like, and wakes up, she talks to Al, and Al gives her the excuse like, "Oh, like he ran off and had sex with Greta." And so Winona leaves, and then Greta comes around the tree and there's like, "Did she buy it?"
And they have like a
barrel.
Yeah, they have like a plastic barrel.
And it like,
and I was,
shakes
and I turned to
bit.
Stuart at this point. I'm like, "Are they gonna melt him?" Like,
is that, like, no, this is the
like
way
Breaking Bad, like when they melt the guys in the barrels.
Like, are they gonna melt him? Like, they melt the bodies in Breaking Bad.
Because like it's one of those like barrels, the plastic barrels that's immune to like melting chemicals or whatever, bleach
acid?
Or acid or whatever the fuck it is.
Sulfuric acid, I think.
And I'm like, I think they're gonna melt him. Like, are they gonna melt him and then inject him into people?
But I made the observation that he would then become more acid.
You would be injecting pure acid into Dermot Mulroney, who might explode at that point.
So then we cut back to another flashback where Dermot Mulroney comes home.
Yeah, and he finds the guy.
He finds the guy in the barrel.
And they're like, "Why'd you do this?" And they're like, "You needed a subject
because
he's got the matching blood type."
Yeah, Al says like to Dermot
Mulroney,
"I want
you to
live
forever."
He's like, "Your treatment, will it work?" It's like, "In theory, it'll work." It's like, "Well, great, I found you the proper blood type." And he's like, "Why did you do that? Did you pick somebody off the street?"
Yeah,
and then but they somehow convince him to go with it.
Yeah,
Dermot Mulroney's character doesn't really have an ethical backbone, I guess. Like, it was weird.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm trying to buy him giving into this.
Yes.
But I'm not quite, it's not
yeah,
selling.
Yeah, no, it doesn't
sell.
I mean, the end of the movie is just that he's selfish, is like kind of the cynical view of humanity.
Whatever.
Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever. And so then now
we're back.
We're back in the shipping container.
Winona's like, "Oh my God, you're tied up to blood."
Yes. So she finds Max, John Gallagher Jr., sedated in a hospital bed with a it's like a blood port connected to his carotid artery
on his neck
that leads into blood bags that are pumping blood out of his body into these bags.
Yes.
Yeah, he's still alive, by the way. Mm-hmm. How long would you say after they initially went to the cabin to this point, how long would you think?
A day.
It's like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks between, right?
It's like not that long.
I completely forgot about this. Like, I was like, a day maybe?
He's not even been missing for like a month. It's 2 weeks.
And everyone convenes in the shipping container.
First Dermot Mulroney.
Then Greta and Al. And they're like, "This is our cow. We're milking his blood." it's like basically what it is. And that's why the movie was originally called The Cow. Isn't it kind of crazy there's a guy in real life who's doing this?
There's a what?
Have you seen that like
Brian
Johnson?
Tech guy who's like,
"I can reverse aging."
He's using his like son's blood or whatever. Or he's using younger DNA or something. Yeah. I know what you're talking
about. No, he's using his son. He's pumping his son's blood into him. And
not,
like.
Not really. Really?
No. Yeah. That's actually what's happening. Here he is. Here's a picture of him.
Oh my God.
He's 47 and you know what? He looks 47.
He looks 47.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He looks like a decent 47.
If everybody lives forever, then nobody will live at all.
Yeah.
That's the lesson.
But there's a guy actually doing that, which is extremely funny. Whoa.
You're looking at our Nerd Donkers chat.
I am, yes. Anyway.
It's really popping off right now.
It is popping off. It's funny.
Sorry.
They all meet here, and Winona's like, you can't do that to a person. And Dormammu's like, yeah, I guess not, but it's happening.
And then there's another twist.
Yeah, there's another twist.
Because Greta, that it's like, I know your test results. They came back negative for that.
You don't have the disease.
You're just milking him for blood to be young forever. Guess what? Dermot Mulroney, who's like at the proper age is like 50 something. Guess what? He looks 50 something. Like he doesn't look like he's getting any younger. So like what is this blood transfusion nonsense even for? And so then Al is like, you lied to me. It's like, yeah, but son, imagine all the extra time we'll have to figure out a cure for all these things. If it's not the nerve disorder, it'll be something else.
Yeah.
So now there's like a change in tactics here. Now it's like Dermot Mulroney isn't transfusing his blood to save his own life from the nerve disorder. Now he's transfusing this guy's blood to live forever. So it's like he wants to be young kind of a thing. But then there's another little twist because Winona's like, give me some.
Yeah.
She's like, what? I also want to live forever.
Yeah.
I'm getting older. And they're like, no, you shouldn't do that. And then like a fight breaks out between like Al and Greta. Dermot Mulroney like injects Greta with a sedative.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they're going to like transfuse her?
Yes.
But why?
For reasons?
This ending in the shipping container is like, this is like a 15-minute sequence or 10-minute sequence. It's not very long, I don't think, right?
Yeah. No, this scene drags on for fucking ever. And that's the thing I like about it. I'm going to make my pitch now.
is going on?
Here's the thing.
What is happening?
This movie's just really slow and vibey. And like, there's parts of it that are kind of good.
Yeah, there's some good vibes.
Yeah. But you know what I like about the end of this? Is that this is the longest fucking scene ever committed to a movie. It is obscene. It keeps going. You're like, okay, well, like,
we're winding it up.
We're winding up. And then it just keeps going. It's like, well, actually, I'm going to be the blood bag now. And then John Gallagher Jr. like rips the blood out of his neck and he dies. Winona beats Owen Teague to death with the catheters or whatever the blood thing is.
Yeah, right.
And it's so silly.
It's very silly.
It is like,
everything is so silly.
Cartoonish.
Yeah. Because like she tries to carry Max out of the shipping container while the guys are distracted. She gets 2 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dermot is like, no, you can't do it. And then Max wakes up from his sedation. Is like, oh, hey, we're going to go to the concert. And then he yanks out the port from his neck and he just bleeds to death right away.
Yeah.
And so then, yeah, like you said, Winona then kills Al. Dermot Mulroney gets, I don't know. What happens to Dermot Mulroney? Something happens to him, but
she locks his ass in the cabin.
I know, but I thought he like got hurt with something. I don't remember what it was. But then then she makes it out of the shipping container and locks the shipping container. And you think like, okay, now we're winding it down.
Yeah.
And we are.
Yeah.
She goes.
But I like how silly this all is.
It was so fucking silly.
Because like the movie needed silliness throughout its whole runtime.
This gives like they had like 15 days to shoot this movie.
Yeah.
And they only had one day to do the shipping container scene.
I like it when you take a scene and you just keep compounding elements onto it. I think that's inherently funny and like a compelling storytelling. Like
when done right.
When done right. Like, the best example I can think of is the fight scene in Anchorman.
Yes.
Where, like,
yeah,
they're walking to buy new suits.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run into Vince Vaughn and with his team.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, this could be funny. A fight scene's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add the element of, Tim Robbins is here with his news crew.
Yeah.
And Luke Wilson's here with his news crew.
Yeah.
And Telemundo's news crew is showing up.
Yeah. Everybody's here. Yeah,
you just keep at building.
It's
this
really
joke.
Funny.
And then the fight starts and they're like, they have rifles and guys on horses. There's pitchforks. There's a guy on fire. Like, that's a very different scenario than this. But I like taking like a very simple confrontation scene
And then just expanding on
building another great example. And this is going to be out of nowhere is Grand Theft Auto 5.
Whoa.
There is a sequence. Have you played Grand Theft Auto 5?
No.
There's a sequence in it where you go to essentially the Los Angeles Observatory. I forget what it's called in real life. But the observatory, you know, the famous building.
Yeah, yeah.
The GTA version of it, where you go there to meet, like, your CIA contact. And like, it turns from the two of you meeting, a third guy shows up, betrays the both of you. A helicopter shows up, starts firing missiles at the building. All of the FBI come. A fellow gang comes to fight you. A four-way shootout starts. The buildings explode, and you're just running through this observatory. It's the funniest sequence in the game because it's like an intense action meet, but it just comes out of fucking nowhere.
For a video game.
For a video game. And it's that's the kind of, like, obviously that's a very different story from, you know, this. But taking this very simple premise of a confrontation in a shipping container over the adrenochroming of John Gallagher Jr. and then just adding seven more people into it and all this shit's happening. They're tying Greta to a bed. She's like, no! She's beating the guy to death with the stick. It's funny. I'm sorry. I know it's not supposed to be, but it's very funny.
That's the problem is, like, it starts to become funny and it's like, it's so not the tone that this
movie
should
be. But at this point,
be.
I'm like, okay, this is kind of the energy the whole movie needs to have.
But it's not.
But it doesn't.
But it doesn't.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's not good.
Yes. This movie needs to be about how a relationship sucks the life out of you. That's what this movie needs to be about. And it keeps towing the line of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. Oh, and it wouldn't take that much to get there.
Yeah. How a relationship sucks the life out of you. And, like, it keeps towing the line of that. And you're like, all right, here's the... And it never comes. And you need that dramatic escalation with every scene. Like, you need things to just be compounding on top of each other for Winona's character.
Yeah.
Because, like, I want to, you know, say Winona is, I think, pretty good and committed in this.
I thought she was pretty good in this movie.
She's actually quite good in this. But she's not giving a lot of, like, big scenes. She really plays the, like, the lovesick.
Lovesick oblivious ex.
Yeah, the lovesick, the kind of, like, she plays the being older and realizing, like, your time is running out for, like, a quality relationship really well, which also explains, like, why she's in this relationship with Max.
Yeah.
And Winona's bringing a lot of this stuff to the table that the movie just isn't building or elaborating upon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, like, I agree. It's not giving a lot to me to chew on.
Which like, sucks.
It does.
Because you want, like, her first big return role to just really give her something to chew on. You want her to have a steak and she has, like, a McDonald's single.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's fine.
It's something.
She ate it well. She enjoyed it, but...
Make sure you just pass it.
To quote
that.
The Gen Zs, she ate.
Stop.
As they say.
Stop.
She cook in with gas.
That's... I don't think
Slay
that's...
Slay queen. anyway. She leaves the shipping container. Fucking locks the door. Trapping Dermot Mulroney inside, where he'll presumably starve to death. with the rotting corpses of the other three.
Yeah. One being his son.
Yes. One being his son, who he might eat for parts. and then...
then she, like... Because it's teased in the movie earlier that, like...
She likes the house.
She loves the cabin. That this cabinet is basically built with her brain in mind. Hence why her and Dermot Mulroney probably would have made a great couple.
Yeah. Yeah,
because they have the same taste.
Yeah, and then she goes back to...
She goes to the car at first.
She goes to the car, and then she's like,
wait a minute. Wait a minute.
The house. And she walks into the house, and she moves in. And I'm like, what's the thematic purpose? That she moves into the house?
And she keeps the house.
She keeps, like... Yeah, like...
She keeps the house.
If this movie is trying to be about a relationship sucking you dry... Or, like, a breakup. A big topic of the divorce is who gets the house.
Yeah.
That's, like, kind of what I think this movie's trying to do. Is, like, she breaks up and she gets the house at the end.
It doesn't feel like the divorce is the case, though.
I exactly agree. It's like,
yeah, this is a breakup, not a
divorce. That's the only way that the thematics of this ending work.
I think it was just literally, like, and then she stays in the house because no one's going to catch her.
But what's the thematic, like, purpose? There's clearly, like, supposed to be, like, she gets the house at the end of this breakup with a guy who she thought was good. and turned out to
he's
not.
He's going to have to like pay taxes on that house. Like,
this guy seems like he's got the house paid off.
Yeah, but you still got to pay property taxes.
Nah.
It's California.
This is true.
California. All right. You got to pay your property taxes. And also, like, she doesn't have the title and deed in her
California.
Name. So there's going to be some problems with the IRS when,
when they show up and there's a bunch of dead bodies in a shipping container.
Well, not that. Just the fact that the house is not in the person's name.
How do you think one procures a shipping container? Do you think you can just buy is it easy to buy one?
It's not particularly difficult. The biggest problem is just like finding the place for it to go.
Yeah, I've now Googled shipping containers for sale, and it is in fact rather easy to purchase one.
Yeah, oh my god! Oh my god! It's
2 to 4 day delivery. I got a shipping container dropped off your apartment in 2 days.
Now, what's the pricing that you're looking at?
$1,000. Yeah, $1,000 probably, right? I don't know. I didn't. It's probably more than $1,000.
If you go to evioncontainers.com.
Because this is like a full shipping container. This is like a back of a truck shipping container.
Yeah. Well, there's
it's $2,000 for one of those used.
What's a 40 foot HC high cube? Okay.
40 foot for like 1600, 2000.
There's a 40 foot high cube. That's 40 feet by 8 feet by, 10 feet.
Should we buy a shipping container?
$2,000 in. Dude, that's cheaper than a MacBook.
Should you and I buy a shipping container?
A shipping container is cheaper than a MacBook.
Let's just buy one and have it dropped off in the middle of fucking nowhere. That's our shipping container.
Think about that for a second. A shipping container is cheaper than a MacBook. Now, the biggest.
You know how many MacBooks you could fit in that shipping container, though?
Like $1 billion worth? Wow.
Hmm.
A layer of rust protects the steel construction of the container and keeps whatever's inside safe and dry. Dense used containers will have collected some dents on their travels around the world or ensure they're wind and watertight before delivery to you. The doors have been opened a lot of times and will show normal wear and tear. You'll be able to open them without maximum effort involved. Okay. Yeah, so these are used containers. Let's make that very abundantly clear. These are used containers, not brand new containers. Although, who's still making brand new containers? Who needs a new container?
I mean, if you're like a fancy company, you might want a new one. But, I mean, it doesn't seem like a shipping container really loses its value. Its purpose.
Yeah, right? I think the biggest problem with shipping containers do you have a plot of land you can put a container on?
I can talk to my parents. Why don't you ship a shipping container to their house? What the fuck is this?
Where are you going to put it? Well, you probably have to sign for delivery. Tilt bed delivery service, no offloading equipment needed. There's flat bed delivery service. You will require your own offloading equipment. So like, do you have like a forklift?
Yeah.
Or you'll need a crane for the 40 foot containers. Then there's pickup for free. You can pick up for free and it saves you quite a bit of money.
Yes.
But also, like, have you ever just like been in the woods and seen like a shipping container in the middle of nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
I have as well.
Yes, of course I have.
Like, but how did it get there? Jeff, how did it get there?
A truck dropped it off, you know?
In the woods?
Yeah.
Seems not likely.
You know, he helicoptered it in. He was the head of a biotech company. Anyway, she moves into the fucking house.
A fucking helicopter lifting up these heavy-ass shit containers. Yeah. The marvels of technology.
She should... I mean, what's clearly going to happen next is Winona's going to starve them out. They're going to die in the shipping container. She's going to melt them all.
In the container?
In the container, I think.
Well, she has a lot of barrels.
She does have a lot of barrels. She can put them all in the barrel and melt them. Easy stuff.
You'll have to chop them up first. So.
Just shove them.
Where do you get sulfuric acid? Hold on.
From Home Depot.
Really?
Stuart, in Breaking Bad, they literally go to like the Home Depot and buy it. I mean, that is a TV show.
Yeah, that's a TV show. It's the reactive chemical that is the world's most widely produced.
I can buy it right now online. I can get 1 gallon for $90 on laballey.com.
That seems sketch. That seems really sketch.
You can get it on Amazon.
But it's a gallon. You need more than a gallon.
Yeah, you're going to have to spend a lot of money, but you can just buy it.
There's a barrel for $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
$1,000 for sulfuric acid. That seems like a big markup.
Yeah.
Like, does it cost how much to make that much sulfuric acid?
You know, it is a simple chemical compound.
Anyway,
she moves into the house.
And she's gone in the day.
Yes, that's the end of the movie. She was lost. What a story, she was Marv. Gone in the night, but now she is found.
She's in found the day. In the day.
Yeah, it's true. Very unsuccessful movie, I'd say.
Which is sad. It started off with like good vibes.
Yeah, it has decent vibes throughout the movie. I wouldn't call this like you know, disastrous. It's like a 4 or 5 out of 10.
I'd agree. 4 or 5.
Yeah. It's like there's parts that are enjoyable. Winona's solid in it. Has a silly ending. But nothing comes together. It's not cohesive.
It's better. I would watch this over Sarah Cooper. Everything's Fine.
Well, yeah, I would watch, you know,
Dirt over Sarah Cooper.
There's a lot of things I watch over Sarah Cooper. Everything's Fine. Mm-hmm. But that's just, you know,
a good effort, yeah. I will say.
A decent try. It comes out in 2020, and it does get overshadowed by Barbarian, I feel like.
Of course it does.
Yeah, it gets a like mediocre reviews. Most people kind of say the same thing we did, which is like, the twist is kind of fun and silly. Winona's good, but there's really nothing here. It's a big blob of a movie. A bit of a movie. Depressingly slack and indecisive, which I would consider is pretty accurate.
Yeah, very indecisive.
Yeah, doesn't know what it wants to be about, doesn't know how to get to that point.
Isn't that crazy how, like, a big flaw in a lot of these movies that we've talked about, like, are literally just, like, they struggle in deciding what they want to be.
Yes.
And
making a movie is hard.
Making a movie is hard. It's just, you would think it's, like, it's one of the first things you think of as a screenwriter is what's your movie going to be about. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you write something and then you film it and it does not play exactly the same and you have to change it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Which is just like, it's a bummer. Like, it's a bummer when a movie is bad.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, a lot of people put time into that and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
This is a movie that kind of bums you out after you watch it. I mean, I was kind of like jazzed from how silly the ending was.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, that's something. I got a little juice there.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But ultimately, just like kind of, it's a flop. It doesn't make any money either.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well.
But it's nice that this kind of like does crack the door open for Winona like having a lead role again. And like Stranger Things is doing the majority of the work, to be clear, for her at this point. But this movie, I think when it's just like, all right, well, Winona Ryder, all right, well, we'll put her in movies again. You know, she got a lead role, right? Because in just 2 little years, she comes on as the lead in Beetlejuice 2. Even though Michael Keaton gets stopped on, she is unquestionably the lead of that movie, I'd say.
Yes, I would say she is the primary.
She's the dramatic arc of the movie is around Lydia Deetz.
And so, yeah, next week, we're at the end?
But before we get to Beetlejuice, there's one movie that she's in that we'll talk about next week. I think that's all we have to say about Gone in the Night, right?
Yeah.
There's one movie. She does have a small role in the 2023 Disney feature, Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
So next week we'll be talking. Sir, have you seen Haunted Mansion?
Nope. I saw the original
Haunted Mansion is maybe the most aggressively fine movie of all time.
Aggressively fine movie?
Yeah. It's like, it is fine with a capital F. It is like, that's fine.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. There's like some parts that are funny. Some parts that are good,
mm-hmm.
And there's that's fine.
It's okay.
It's like a sturdy 6, maybe 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
But we'll be talking about that next week, hopefully with a guest. 2023's Haunted Mansion. Tune in next week to figure out what's going on there. Figure out why that mansion's haunted, and figure out why the fuck is Jared Leto in this movie. A question we will seek to answer.
And I think it's worth mentioning right now because, you know, we're talking about Gone in the Night. Yeah. We're about to be gone with Winona soon.
Yeah.
It's Haunted Mansion next week.
Then Beetlejuice 2
after that. And then we go into our retrospective.
And then we have, it's our Christmas episode.
And it's our Christmas episode.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that it timed out that the Christmas episode just can actually air at the very end. And it comes out on Christmas itself this year.
That's fucking great.
Isn't that nice?
That's so nice.
Yeah, so people, all the kids waking up Christmas morning.
You time it out like that?
We'll have a new episode
oh,
for oh. us to listen to.
And then we'll...
what we'll be doing for the Christmas, you'll find out down the line.
And what will you be doing for season four?
That you'll find out.
That is to be announced.
You'll find out during our final Winona episode. We'll announce the next lineup of three things we have to cover. We're gonna have a little bit in between seasons on this one. Two episodes.
Oh.
We've talked about it.
Okay.
We'll talk about it again off mic.
Yeah.
But for the time being, thank you so much for listening to this episode on Gone in the Night. Hope you enjoyed it. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. Pop into our Reddit, r/Trevolting, @TrevoltingPod on Instagram. You can find me on... Actually, no, you can't find me on anything.
Are you off of all social media?
Not all social media. But I am off my public profiles.
Instagram?
I have a private Instagram.
Oh, right.
You can pop into our Reddit. Special thanks, as always, to Rebecca Johnson for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem-Smith for the theme music that's currently taking you out. Have a great rest of your week, folks. See you next time for Haunted Mansion.